And so next week we'll probably get to learn, there'll probably be a source sheet, we'll learn the Ragachavar's Torahs inside. But this week, just by way of Hakdama, just to talk about the life of the Ragachavar a little bit. About 150 years ago, a very unique neshama came to this world by the name of Rav Yosef Rosen, the Ragachavar Gaon. And, you know, we believe as Jews, we believe that every person is special and unique, right, and one of a kind. The Ragachavar was mamish one of a kind. It's not exaggerated to say. Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, wrote a sefer called Ichim Vishitos, which has a lot of beautiful biographical sketches of different gedolim. Rav Chaim Brisker's in here, the Ragachavar's in here, Rav Kook is in here, the Netziv is in here, Rav Zalman Melter's in here. Very beautiful. He talks about Ishim Vishitos, people and their attitudes. So let's read you one line that he has, a couple lines that he has about the Ragachavar. He says, "Hurgalnu b'to'orim mugzamim." We're used to using all sorts of exaggerated, you know, this guy's a tzaddik, this guy's he's a gon, he's a, you know, he's this, he's that. We're prapa eila habayim b'shas evil b'shas yovel. He's one in a generation, right? We use these terms all the time. Ulam hagon haragachaver, hayachad bedara lo b'melitza v'lo b'shigra. Says Rav Zevin, the Ragachavar was one of a kind, not without exaggeration, without any sort of false flattery. Right, he was mamish one of a kind, as we'll see. Lo nimtza sheni lo b'dorenu. There was no one like him in our times. V'gam b'doros harbe lefanav ula'achav. It's not exaggerated to say he was mamish, totally above and beyond people of his generation, generations before, and generations certainly that follow. V'v'chinas yediya b'kiyutit mufla shal kol ha'Torah kula. His b'kiyas in Torah was unparalleled. L'chlaleu pratel, prate pratel. The details of everything he knew, lechedre chadreha, leomke sisreha, he mamish knew it all. Unbelievable, one of a kind. And he says on the next page, on page 94, he says, the gedolim referred to the Ragachavar as the Sar HaTorah. He says, Einani yodeim yesh leTorah Sar. I don't know if you could assign the title of a, you know, this person is the Sar HaTorah. I'm not sure. I don't know, Raisa, Kuchibrichu, Kulachad, Hashem and the Torah are one. To say that a person is appointed over the Torah is hard to say. He says, however, we should just know that the Gedolim referred to the Ragachavar as the Sar HaTorah, as the, you know, the nobleman over the Torah, the one who controlled the Torah. He mamish knew it inside out. So it's important just to see how he was perceived by his contemporaries and by later generations. And this was Rav Yosef Rosen, the Ragachavar. Okay, when was the Ragachavar alive? When did he live? Anyone know? When did he live? When did he pass away? So he was born in the year Tafresh Yud Ches, which is 1858. Okay, where was he born? He was born in Ragachov. Where's Ragachov? In Poland? It's near Poland.
Russia?
The Ragachov is in modern day Belarus. So it's in far eastern Europe. Right? If you go like up and to the right, that's where Russia is. If you go down and to the left, that's where Poland is. That's where the Ragachov was born. A town called Ragachov. His father was a very big Torah scholar himself. His name was Ephraim Fishel Rosen. And his parents had very strong Lubavitch ties, which is why you'll see the Lubavitchers. You open up a Gutna Chumash, you'll see once in a while the quote, Tzafnas Paneach. Right? You've seen that?
Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of people say he was the Rebbe's Rebbe.
He was the Rebbe's Rebbe. Well, the Lubavitch Rebbe certainly did a lot to explore the Torah of the Ragachavar. So I don't know if he considered, I don't think he was his Rebbe per se, in a direct sense, but yeah, he certainly quotes from him a lot. And Lubavitch has done a lot to spread the teachings of the Ragachavar. No, but you're thinking something else?
Yeah, probably. I think
okay.
It doesn't make sense at times.
Okay.
1858.
But his parents were very much connected to Lubavitch. His father was a chassid of the Tzemach Tzedek. Tzemach Tzedek being the third Lubavitch Rebbe. His mother, Sarah, was either, saw different things in different Svarim, either a granddaughter or a great-granddaughter of Rav Gershon of Ragachov, who was one of the first disciples and Talmidim and Hasidim of the Alter Rebbe. So on both sides of his family, his mother and his father, he had strong, very strong connections to Lubavitch. Okay, that's when he was born in 1858. Now, from a very young age, people saw the Ragachavar is not, it was very obvious from a young age, this person is not at all normal. You know, Chad Bidara, the Sar HaTorah, in a very real way. We don't know so much about his youth. There's not a lot of stories. But the truth is, if the Ragachavar were alive, we could ask him about his youth, because he knew it very well. Rav Mordechai Pinchas Teitz, who passed away in 1995, He grew up in a town not far from where the Rugachever was stationed, in Dvinsk, where the Rugachever was rabbi for many years. And his father had a relationship with the Rugachever, and he used to send him to the Rugachever. Rav Tait says one time he came to the Rugachever, and they were talking about a particular sugya, and the Rugachever said to him, he said, it's funny that you mentioned that topic. I don't know if he said it's funny. He said, it's interesting you mentioned that topic, right? I remember 35 years ago, I spoke about this topic at a train station in Vilna. So Rav Tait said to him, how do you do that? And he remembered it with the details. He was going, he's saying exactly what the conversation was. The Rugachever said to him, in all seriousness, he said, from the time I was 3 years old and on, I remember every detail of my life. From 3 years old and on. Not just generally. I remember the details. It's not Shaykh. Rav Tait's, we'll talk more about it maybe next week, or maybe at the end of today's share. Rav Tait's was very much involved in printing the Torah of the Rugachever. We'll talk at the end how the Rugachever's Torah made it out of Europe. It was almost destroyed by the Nazis. A lot of it was destroyed by the Nazis. But Rav Tait's was responsible for setting up various institutions to print the Svarim of the Rugachever. And he wrote a very beautiful introduction about the Rugachever in his Sefer Tzavtas Paneach above Mitzia. And in there he talks different, he has 15, 16 different points about the Rugachever to clarify who he was, what he was like, because he knew him personally. He says the Rugachever, people say the Rugachever had a tremendous memory, right? So the famous line from the Meshech Chachma, from the Or Sameach, right, who was a rabbi in Dvinsk at the same time as Rugachever, said it's not that he has a tremendous memory. Memory is a term they use for a person who remembers something he hasn't looked at in a long time. The Rugachever is learning everything at that moment. So it's not that he's remembering something that he had learned, last week or a year ago or 5 years ago. He's osek in kol haTorah kula at every moment. So Rav Tait said differently. Rav Tait said it differently. He said, when I got to know the Rugachever, I realized he does not have the koach of shechacha. He doesn't have the ability to forget. He's just not. He doesn't have that ability. And it is an ability. There is a mila to forgetting. He says, he writes in his introduction to Bava Metzia, the Rugachever did not have the koach of shechacha. He didn't forget anything. The Rugachever told Rav Tait himself, from the time I was 3 years old, I remember everything. So we don't know too much about his youth, although again, if we could speak to him, he'd probably be able to tell us a lot about it. Okay, one story that we do have, that some question some of the details of the story, when he was about 5 or 6 years old, his father took him to the Tzemach Tzedek of Lubavitch to get a bracha. So he came to him, the Rebbe gave him a bracha, you should be a big lamdan. And then he said, he turned to his father, he turned to the Rugachever as a little boy, he said, I think it would be appropriate for the boy to learn Nazir. To learn Maseches Nazir. So the Rugachever walked out, and as a little kid, he turns to his father, he says, why did the Rebbe give me a bracha that I should learn Nazir? A Jew is supposed to try to learn Kol HaTorah Kula. So why did the Rebbe highlight that I should learn Nazir? So his father, didn't have an answer. And he said, Rugachever's little boy said to his father, he says, I think the Rebbe wants me to be a Nazir. And to be a Nazir, I need to learn the halachos. And it could be that the Rebbe's bracha is Haba HaTalia. Meaning the second part of the bracha, learn Nazir, is connected to what? To the first part of the bracha, which is, you're going to become a big lamdan. If I don't take upon myself to learn Nazir, the first part of the bracha, becoming a big lamdan, is not going to come true. So the Rugachever decided from that point on that he's not cutting his hair. Now, if you've seen pictures of the Rugachever, which I'm sure some of you have, I'll just show you one of the sermons I've been using. There's a Hebrew biography on the Rugachever. Right, that's the picture of the Rugachever. He had very wild hair. My personal favorite picture is on page 81. Or 80. Page 80. He looks a little... I don't know, I like this one. That's the Rugachever. I'll show you one more. He was a pretty wild-looking Jew. That's the Rugachever. Chechad B'dara, the Sar HaTorah. That's wild. Yeah, well, he had a relationship with Albert Einstein, as we'll see. Maybe we'll get to that. They said about him, different statements were said about the Rugachever. He's twice the, Bialik said about him, the poet Bialik said he's twice the brain of Einstein. Others said he has three times the brain of Einstein. People who knew Einstein. The Rugachever met Einstein. They spoke in learning, I guess you could say.
Wasn't the Rugachever able to speak to somebody and be writing two parashim at the same time?
They say that about Reb Chaim Ozer, I think. But yeah, some of the Rugachever could do all those things also. He was not...
I heard he used to do Simash. He used to finish Shas every day.
Okay, I mean, that's what the Meshech Chachma was saying. The Meshech Chachma said he's every moment he's osek in Kol HaTorah Kula. So it's not a question of remembering. He's osek in it right now. But he never forgot anything. It's pretty remarkable. Anyway, so he decided. So he wasn't halachically a nazir, right? The Lubavitcher Rebbe, who told this story, says tzarachin, how he drank the arbikosos yain. It was known that one of the Rebbe didn't eat a lot. It was known though that he liked to eat grapes. Okay, so he wasn't a nazir.
Did he shave?
In a halachic sense. Did he what?
Did he shave? He passed
me. Ah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because shaving, it's important to realize that a nazir is allowed to shave his beard. The Rashba is a tshuva. Chilak Aleph, Simon 407, Taf Zayin, that says that a Nazir is only not allowed to cut or pull out the hair of his head. Rabbi Reisman likes to tell that story, because Rabbi Reisman once saw a picture of, someone drew a picture of Shimshon as a clean-shaven, sorry, so that's ridiculous. And then he either learned or realized, I don't remember what point of his life this was, he realized, no, the picture in fact is accurate. Shimshon could have been clean-shaven. Right? He had very long hair, but... So it's not a shaila on the Ragat Shavar's beard. And again, even on his hair, a nazir, right? Even a person, the Mishnah says in the first parak, a nazir olam, a person who says, I'm going to be a nazir for the rest of my life, he's allowed to cut his hair when it gets heavy, which is once a year. All right, it's a discussion. Can he trim his hair? Can he shave his head completely once a year if he wants? Right? But, okay. So the Ragat Shavar wasn't a halachic nazir, but he was a nazir in the sense that he was mamish detached from this world. I mean, you'll see, I'll tell you what happened by his own wedding, and you'll see how much he was not, he just wasn't shy to it. So in that sense, he took upon himself to be a nazir, and in that sense, he fulfilled that part of the deal, and the other half of the deal of becoming a big lamed, and I don't think we need to explain that certainly came true. Now, there are other reasons in this biography by Yair Borokhov. He gives four other reasons why the Ragat Shavar didn't cut his hair. I don't really get them. Like, I don't even understand what he's saying. Like, for example, he says, some people say that the Ragat Shavar's hair had a kalach of chius. Like, meaning, just as if I cut my arm, I would feel pain. So if you cut the Ragat Shavar's hair, it was alive. It had a kalach of hargash of chius, and it was... Okay, I don't know what that means. Okay, others say he didn't want to sit... The second and third answer are somewhat related. He didn't want to sit with an uncovered head, even for a moment. So he didn't want to take off his yarmulke to get a haircut. So I always said, there's plenty of hair that he could trim here without taking off his yarmulke. And just look at the picture. So I didn't understand that. So some say, well, he didn't want to waste time getting a haircut to stop learning Torah. So I was curious, and I don't know what the halachic answer is. If you're wearing a yarmulke and you're getting a trimmer on the side, you're allowed to learn Torah? When you get a haircut, you have to wash your hands because there's a ruach ra. So are you not allowed to learn Torah while you're getting a haircut, even if your head was covered? So I'm not sure. That's what I'm saying. It was Bittul Torah. He didn't want to get a haircut. Okay. He let his hair grow his whole life. He never cut it. It would probably be a lot longer. And his beard also. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure exactly what the pshat is. He tells the following testimony that he heard from a Rav, someone by the name of Rav Yisachar Tamar, who heard it directly from Rav Yosef Freer, who was a Meshamish, who was a Shamish for the Ragat Shavar at one point in his life. He said, the Ragat Shavar told me the real reason, and I'll tell you what it is, and I don't understand what this means either. Rav Yisachar Tamar wrote, he says, the Ragat Shavar didn't cut his hair, and he said, I heard this from someone who knew him personally, who took care of the Ragat Shavar. He says, because Hayelo Klikin Besaros Rosho, V'tigalachas Hayakoroch B'sakana Mamish. He had Klikin in his hair, and to cut his head was sakana mamish. What's klikin? So the Gemara Nazir, the Yerushalmi Nazir, defines what klikin is. And the Karban Eda, the Mefarshim say, klikin means that your hair is like sweaty and knotty and tangled. Okay? So I'm not sure what was the sakana mamish to cut his hair because it was what was going to happen to him. It was too... I really don't understand any of these answers. But okay, this was... some again questioned this whole story with the Tzemach Tzedek, if that's why his hair was long to begin with, but at least again you have some who bring down that the Tzemach Tzedek told him to learn Nazir, and therefore he took on at least somewhat of the outer appearance of a Nazir.
I heard another reason.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more logical.
Okay, let's hear.
He one time cut his head very badly when he was cutting his hair, so he used to cut his hair very
badly. Okay. I mean, if it's true, it's true. Like Ibn Ezra says, in Kabbalah Akabel, if that's how it is, then okay. I don't know. That's not what's, it's not recorded. At least none of this farm that I've seen, but could be.
I just heard that. I don't know.
All right. I can't tell you yes or no. Okay. How about being a big lamdin, the other half of the bracha? So even at a young age, the Ragat Shavar was a big lamdin. On Yom Kippur, when he was a kid, his father sent him home to eat. And when he came back to shul, his father said to him, in benching, did you say Yalav Yavo? So the Ragashar on the spot, as a little kid, as a young boy, said, he said, of course not. He says, the whole reason a katan says brachos is to be mechanechem. He says, when I'm a gadol, I'm not going to eat on Yom Kippur. So when I bench on Yom Kippur, I don't have to say yal v'yavo, because it's not shayach, right? The whole reason I'm making the bracha now is mitzad chinuch. He was pretty sharp from even a young age. And it was a big problem, because they couldn't find anyone to teach him. Very quickly, he outgrew the local cheder. They didn't know what to do with him. The mamash had no clue what to do with him. He used to learn with his father. They described, Rav Zevin described, others describe also, when he would learn with his father, the two of them looked like he would start screaming at his father, you're not right, you're wrong. And then he'd realize it's his own father, and he'd like, say, Tati, I'm sorry. And then they'd go right back at it. But there was no one he could learn with. He was just so much faster than everyone. So at about the age of 13, his father sent him to Slutsk, to the Beis Halevi. And he sat and he learned Bechavrusa with Rav Chaim, the Beis Halevi's son, Rav Chaim Brisker, for a year. Which is interesting. They were both obsessed with the Rambam. They used to learn Rambam all the time. The Beis Halevi used to yell at them, go learn more Gemara. Right? And they said, Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu to them was the Rambam. Day and night. And they both went on to obviously, write very chashiv svarim on the Rambam. But it's interesting to think that he was, just to give you some context of where the Ragashav fits into Jewish history, he was a chavrus of Rav Chaim Brisker for a year. After that, he decided it was time to move on, and he traveled to Shklov to learn by the Ma'aril Diskin, Yeshua Leib Diskin. Okay, we don't know so much about that time, but one story that we do know, some say he was even younger, some say he was as young as even 10 years old, there's a story that one of the older Bachrim, who was learning by Rav Yeshua Leib Diskin, asked him once, they say you're a big Eloi, right? The Eloi from Ragashav, so tell me, how much of Shas do you know? Right? So he says, I know half of Shas. So the guy said, half of Shas, that's pretty good. He said, which half do you know? He said, whichever half you ask me. Right? Whichever half you ask me. Imamish knew Shas inside out. By 8 years old, everyone says he knew Nezikin Baal Peh. Could be by the time he was, again, 10, 12, 13, he knew Shas forwards and backwards. Okay, at 17, he decided, I'm bored with everyone, pretty much, and I'm going to travel around the world to see if there's anyone who can learn on my level. He set out on a world tour. Traveling throughout Europe to see, his lashon was, to see if the Velt knows to learn a little bit. And he came to Warsaw and he shmoozed with some of the Gedolim there, and then from there he went to Lublin. And in Lublin, he came to the author of the Sefer Torah Chesed of Lublin, who was a tremendous Gaon, who was a Chesed of, I think also of the Tzemach Tzedek, but a tremendous Gaon. He comes to me, walks in, and he says, Shalom Aleichem. And the Torah Chesed of Lublin says, come, shave b'ni, sit down, my son. So the Rav Shaver wants to show what he knows, and immediately starts rattling off every place in Talmud Bavli, Yerushalmi, Medrash, where you have an expression where someone tells someone else to sit down. And he rattles them all up. Oh, shave b'ni, that reminds me. I am this, I am that, I am this. And the Torah's Chesed of Lublin, sitting there, is impressed by this young man, 17 years old. And then he says to him, you missed one. And the Rav Shaver is like, whoa, who is this? Who is this Jew? Right? And he takes out a Chuvah Sarash, he takes out a Chidushay Rashba, and he shows him that the Rashba had a certain gear son, a particular Gemara, where it says, sit down, my son. And the Ragashar was very impressed, and they went on, they sat for hours, being Bapalpil, Betorah. And afterwards, the Ragashar says, is there anyone else in this town who can learn like you? He says, I'll give you an address of someone to go to. And he gave him the address of Tzaldik HaKohen of Lublin. So the Ragashar went off, headed over to the home of Tzaldik HaKohen of Lublin. He comes to Rav Tzaddok, he walks in, and immediately starts to engage him in pilpul. And Rav Tzaddok says to young man, do you have a question for me? Did you come here with a specific question? So he says, no, I came to, to Mepalpil B'Torah, right? To engage in the Mechamta Shel Torah. So Rav Tzaddok says to him, I was a young man like you once also. It's an amazing story. It's one of the best stories. He says, I was a young man like you once also. I know what it's like where the blood is rushing and flowing and you're excited and you want to go conquer the world. He says, I did the same thing. I traveled around. I debated all the Gedolim and I beat them all. My mom beat every single one of them. He says, but then I came to the Ishbitzer Rebbe, who became my Rebbe, and he told me that the Iker thing is Yiras Shamayim. So he says, it's great that you want to learn and you want to reach the highest levels of Lamdus, that's Gvaldik, but the Iker is Yiras Shamayim. And the Ragashav was greatly changed by that. He says it stuck with him the rest of his life. For the rest of his life, he said, the words of that Zakein, he said, oi, did the words of that Zakein, penetrate the bones. It really, because he realized, what am I doing? And Rav Tzaddik said to him, he said, does it bring any more Kvod Shemayim if I beat you or you beat me? Right? It's not like it was Masha that he could beat him if they were to go at it. He said that's the Lashon. Is it would bring more honor to Hashem if I beat you, or even if you beat me? Right? In a pilpul? He says this doesn't help. Go to a tzaddik for guidance. That's what he told him. And he told him the ikr is Yir Hashemayim, like the Gemara says. Right? Yir Hashem hi otzer.
How old was Rav
Tzadik? I'm not sure. I was trying to figure that out. Rav Tzadik passed away in 1900. Right? Rav Tzadik passed away in 1900. I'm not sure when Rav Tzadik was born. So he was about 7. The Ragacher was about 17 at the time. So Rav Tzadik was probably. I mean, we can figure it out. We can look it up. I was thinking about it just before, though. I didn't look it up. I don't know when Rav Tzadik's birth was, but we can figure it out. I'm guessing he was somewhere in his 40s, 50s. He's at least twice the age of the Ragacher at the time. So anyway, so that was one person who gave the Ragacher a shikul musar, and he took it to heart in a serious way. Regarding the Yiras Shemayim of the Ragacher, we have a story that Rav Avram Zemba, the son of Rav Menachem Zemba, Hashem Yikom Damo, tells. He says Rav Menachem Zemba was once sitting with a group of young Hasidim. And he was talking about there's no one, the Ragacher, he's describing this Gaon, Rav Yosef Rosen, happens to be these Bachrim there, we're only familiar with, you know, the Gedolim of their own circles. So one of the youngest members of this little group said to Rav Menachem Zemba, "No, you tell us he's a big Lamdin. Tell us about his Kedusha, tell us about his Yiras Shemayim, tell us about his Chassidus." So Rav Menachem Zemba said, "I'll give you a mashal." He said there was apparently this fellow by the name of Yeshaya Privis, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, it was one of the richest Jews of Poland. And he said he used to do these tremendously expensive business dealings. And they're talking in the millions. And he said to these young men, he said, "How much, what percentage do you think he took on any of those deals, on any given deal?" He said, "I'll tell you, about 0.25% or maybe 0.5% on the entire deal." He says, "And you have nice Jewish women in the marketplace who are selling vegetables, and they're turning 100%, 200% profit." He says, "Who's making more money?" Right? He says, "This Rabbi Yeshaya, this rich Jew from Poland, who's making, you know, 1%, let's say, on a multi-million dollar deal, he's making more in one deal than this woman who's making, you know, who's in theory is turning 100% profit or 200% profit, right, is making in the entire year." So he said the same thing with the Ragacher. If you want to ask, you know, what was his tefillah like, the Ragacher davened very quickly. He would yell at, you know, he wouldn't come to Osel Makom. Yeah, he wouldn't install, it wouldn't be for the Ragacher. He would think it's a bittul zman and a waste of time. And he was the head of the Hasidic community in Dvinsk. Right, the Orsa Meach, the Meir Simcha Kohen of Dvinsk was the head of the Misnagdic, you know, Ashkenazic community. The Hasidic community was headed by the Ragacher. But his tefillah was quick. You know, he wasn't, you don't get the impression, although there are some indication that he learned some Sifrei Hasidus. Again, he was from a Hasidic family. But you don't get the impression that was, you know, it was Rambam and it was, he didn't learn Shulchan Aruch. He didn't need Shulchan Aruch. He learned the Gemara and he learned the Rambam. All day with the Rambam. He passed straight, yeah. Pasuk straight out, we'll talk about next week why we often don't follow the Ragacher halacha, because it was somewhat outside the you know, the realm of normative halachic thinking. But yeah, that's how he did things. So he wasn't osek in Sifrei Chassidus, but the Rav Menachem Zemba's mashal, the point is, he says, from the Gemara that he learns, from the Torah that he learns, there's such a kedusha that even if he's bringing back a 1% return of Yiras Shemayim, it's already going to be more than you guys who are sitting all day with your, you know, Hasidic farm and davening at Lent. That was what Rav Menachem Zemba said back to this young bacher. There were other people over the course of that world tour who gave the Ragacher Musar. Right? There was a Rebbe by the name of the Kapusta Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Zalman, who was one of the seven sons of the Tzemach Tzedek, who the Ragacher used to travel to talk and learning with. And one time he sent him a letter. He said, "I think it's time," he sent to the Ragacher, "I think it's time that you adopt the ways of your Rebbe." So everyone asked the Ragacher, and they, you know, it was known that he had sent this letter, and they asked some of the Talmidim, asked the Ragacher, "What does that mean?" So he says, "I'll tell you what it means." He says, "My Rebbe, the Beis Halevi," going back to Slutsk, right? He says, "My Rebbe, the Beis Halevi, had a snuff box on his desk. And on the snuff box it said, there was an abbreviation of the Osios, Shin Pei Vav, Shin Mem Nun. And I always wanted to know what it stood for. And the Beis Halevi would never tell me." He says, "One time we were learning, and the Beis Halevi got stuck on a kasha in a Tosfos, and he needed my help, basically. And I said, 'I'm not helping you unless you tell me what the you know, the code on the snuffbox stands for.' So the Beis Halevi, 'Okay, you know, Torah, I need a Tosfos. I can't be mocha on Tosfos.' So he said, 'I'll tell you, it stands for Shomer Piv Ulishono, Shomer Mitzaras Nafsho Pasuk in Mishlei, Mishlei Perachaf Aleph.' He says, why? He says, when I was young, I had a very quick tongue, Beis Levi said. I used to respond very quickly to people. I was mavatal people very quickly. He says, I wanted to remind myself to show restraint. Show me pivul lishono. If you guard your tongue, show me tzaras nafsho. So he says, that's what the Kapusta Rebbe meant when he sent me that letter. And he said, it's time for you to adopt the hanhagos of your Rebbe, the Beis Halevi, that you need to learn to guard your sharp tongue. Right? There's no question that Ragachar had a very sharp tongue. He was funny. He had a tremendous sense of humor. All the Sfarim that I've looked at all mentioned the Ragachar b'miuchad in his humor. Someone once came to him with the Sefer of his Chidushim for Haskama. Right, which was like a crazy thing to do. I mean, you were asking for it when you did that. There are many stories where people came and asked. So one story that's brought down on one of the Sfarim is that he came to him and he's looking at it and he says, oh, he says, I read through your Sefer, it's Kavaldik. He said, in fact, I found a Chiddush in your Sefer. And the guy's all excited, right? So he says, I see here at the end of the Hakdama, you wrote your name is so-and-so, Ben, so-and-so, and you wrote your mother's name. He said, I never knew your mother's name. He said, it's a Chiddush to me. Right? Basically, you're saying everything else in the Sefer is a waste of time. I don't need to. Right? Another similar story brought down in the art scroll, The Torah Personality, tells a story that one time someone came for us. Come on, the Rosh was looking, psh, amazing, wow, ooh. And the guy's all excited. Yeah, Rebbe, what do you see that you like? So he says, I never knew that there was a printing press in Pyatrakov. He's looking at the Shahr blog. I never knew there was a printing press in this town. It's amazing. He's like, that's it? Like, that's all you got out of my Sefer? Yep, that's all I got out of your Sefer. You know, he was mavatal. He was pretty much mavatal everyone. He didn't really hold of pretty much anyone. Rav Zevin tells a story. A woman came to the Ragachar for a bracha. And the Ragachar said, I'm not a tzaddik. I don't give brachas. He said, the only bracha I make is netilas yadayim and hamotzi. Like, I don't give brachas. So there was another rabbi who was visiting at the time. So he said to the Ragachar, he says, you know, rabbi, right? He says, you know, the Chazal say, a birchas hedyot should not be light in a person's eyes. So kal v'chomer, the bracha from you, even if you don't hold yourself to be the biggest rabbi in the world, so give the woman a bracha. So he says back to this other rabbi, he says, why would you rely on me to give the bracha based on a kal v'chomer? Why don't you just give the bracha? Meaning what? He's saying, you're the head yod. You don't need the kal v'chomer for the head yod, you can give the bracha. Right? He says, I don't think you need the kal v'chomer, you can just give the bracha yourself if you feel that she needs a bracha so badly. This was how the Ragachar was. I heard a story about 5 years ago from Rabbi Sachs from YU. I have no idea where I heard this story, but I found it in my notes on the 8th of Av, 5767. Okay? I don't know where I was. Maybe in B'nai Ashurin. He told this story about the Ragachar. He said the Ragachar was once walking in a cemetery, and he was learning. So someone said to him, "Nu loig l'rosh, not allowed to. It's going to be a bizoy to the mason." So Ragachar said, "Nah." He said, "They didn't understand me when they were alive. They don't understand me when they're dead. It doesn't really matter." Right? No one understood him. He was mamish, you know, yishichmo l'mala. No one understood the Ragachar, and he was essentially, you know, didn't hold of anyone. He was mavatal everyone. Now there was, just so we don't walk out thinking that he was a cruel person. It was often done with a sense of humor.
Did he argue with Rishonim?
Yeah, he argued with everyone. He didn't learn Rishonim. He didn't care for Rishonim. The Rambam, that was all he cared about.
He argued with the Rambam?
The Ragachar held that he got sick and he died because he had no respect for Rishonim. He said the Rishonim teamed up against him to punish him. Because he could care less. He learned Rishonim, some Rishonim. Achronim, forget about it.
So he was like the grunt, he pushed himself back again?
He was. He went straight to the story. He passed it out of the Gemara. You'd ask him, when Shilas would arrive at his doorstep, he'd open up the letter and just start writing. Gemara, 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 Gemara. He didn't know Shulchan Aruch. I'll tell you in a second. He mamash didn't learn Shulchan Aruch until he got married. And his wife said, you got to get smicha, so that way you can get a rabbinic position, so that way you can have a job. So he went and he got smicha. I'll tell you that story in a minute. But just to show you the softer side of the Ragachar just for a minute. The Ragachar, you know, as much as he was mevatel pretty much everyone, he did have a certain trust in the Jewish people, right? On a halachic level, as you'll see, but he trusted Klal Yisrael. They asked the Ragachar one time, you know, why don't you go to the matzah factory before Pesach? It's a minhag Yisrael that, you know, the Rav should go to the matzah factory. He says, I can't go to the matzah factory. He said, why not? He said, because if I go to the matzah factory, I'm positive I'll find something that's not in accordance with a Rambam or a Gemara. Something will not be up to my standard, and I'm gonna trave up the whole place. You know, I'm gonna say that everything is chametz, right? He says, but if I don't go to the matzah factory, so we have a klal that, you know, there's a certain ne'emanis, a certain kashrus by a Jew. If I don't know, I can trust that this Jew is going to whoever's baking the matzah. There's an amanas, and then I can eat matzah l'mahadrin. If I go and I look, then I'm going to have a problem. If I don't look, I can trust. So as much as, you know, he was mevatel the whole world, he trusted, you know, Chazal's understanding that a yid has a certain cheskes kashrus, and he was, you know, he was willing to put his life on the line as far as, you know, an iser karis of eating matzah that he knew that if he would have looked at, would have been problematic. Just one other story about the gentle nature of the Rakachavar. Where Pesach Kron tells in The Magid Speaks, page 95. I know you've read all those books, but I don't know if you remember this story about the Ragachavar. Rav David Finkel. Rav David Finkel was the son of the Rosh Hashiva of Hebron, Rav Moshe Finkel. And he was also a nephew of Lazer Yehuda Finkel from Mir, and also a nephew of Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltzer. So he, when he was 13, he was sent by his father also to travel around and meet Gedolim. Lav Dafka to disprove the whole world, but to meet Gedolim. And he ended up by the Ragachavar. And the Rebbetzin brought out for the Ragachavar some soup and this cream dish. Now the Ragachavar, his wife was always pressuring him to eat and take care of himself and go to doctors, and he wasn't interested in any of it. So she brings out this dish, and Rav David Finkel is sitting there as a young boy, he's 13 years old, and the Ragachavar says he's not interested, and then he says, you know what, if David will eat, if David will have something to eat, I'll eat with him. So bring out two spoons. And they sat there, taking turns. He said, you take a spoon, then I'll take a spoon. For every spoon you take, I'll take a spoon also. And they sat there eating this cream dish, talking divrei Torah in between. And Rav David Finkel said afterwards, he realized the great sensitivity of the Ragachavar. Because the Ragachavar understood that David Finkel's been, you know, Rav David Finkel's been traveling around, and he hardly had anything to eat. And if the Ragachavar doesn't eat, he's going to be embarrassed to eat in front of him. So the Ragachavar went against his whole nature to eat in order to make this young boy feel comfortable. So again, there was a certain, obviously, gentle side to the Ragachavar, sensitive side to the Ragachavar, but there was also certainly a very sharp side to the Ragachavar. Okay, let's just do a drop more before I have to stop. Let's go back to his life for a minute. So that was 17, he was traveling around disproving the whole world. 18, he got married. He married a young woman by the name of Rivka Garfinkel. Father was Rav Moshe Garfinkel, a Ger Chassid from Warsaw. And the Ragachavar was supported by him for 8 years. He sat and learned for 8 years. Rav Menachem Zemba was born in a house that was shared a courtyard with the Ragachavar. And he said that when he was a little boy on the way back from Cheder, everyone used to run past the Garfinkel house to look in the window to see this, you know, this Peledik Yid. Right? They saw him pacing back and forth all day with a Rambam in his hand. And they said, as kids, they used to go and to watch, just to see. And they were so intrigued by his appearance and the fact that he studied Rambam all day. The Ragachavar got married. Svarim say that he was once asked about his Seder Limud during those 8 years, during that period of his life. He said, I was learning 18 hours a day, and I was doing 18 blot an hour. So go figure. You know, go make the cheshbon yourself. But his wife said, no, you have to get smicha. You've never even learned the Shulchan Aruch. So what do I need smicha for? She says, because you need to get, eventually you're going to need to take a rabbinic position. So he went back to Lublin, to the Torah's Chesed of Lublin. And he said, no, okay, what do I need to do to get smicha? So he said, at least learn the first 110 simanim of your Yoredeya. Okay, he said, I'll give you 6 months. Taught him like how to do it. Right? This is what you need to do. Ragachavar came back a month later. He said, I finished all 403 simanim of Yoredeya. You can test me. He tested him. And that's it. He learned through it once, and he knew it for the rest of his life. He never needed to look at it again. He got his smicha. When his first wife passed away, the Ragachavar married her sister. Married his sister-in-law. And when it was time for the chuppah, he was sitting, he was learning Rambam, Kiyadua, learning a piece of Rambam, something to do with Karbanos at the base of Mikdash. And they came to him, they said, Chosin, you know, it's time for you to come to your chuppah. She said, oh, okay. You know, he got up, he folded the page, and he kissed the Rambam and said, Rebbe, I'm sorry, I have to go get married, I'll be back soon. He went to the chuppah. His one request at the chuppah was, he doesn't want Amaratzim to hold the canopy, make sure, you know, Kusher Yidin, by his standard, we're holding the canopy. And the second they were done, he ran back to the Rambam, and eventually they went and they found him. They said, you have to come to the Suda. And they pulled him away from the Rambam for a few minutes. It's not shayach to hear these types of stories. His fame started to spread throughout Warsaw during those years, as he was a young man. And they wanted him to become a Rav. So he said, I'll consider becoming a Rav, but I need to have a yeshiva. If I'm going to stop learning full time, I need to have a yeshiva of top guys. The Ragachavar's yeshiva, the biography says, failed. Because a small group of people gathered around. They thought, okay, maybe we'll join the Ragachavar's yeshiva. When he started to describe to them what his bare minimum standard was, it was just, slowly, like, guys would just disappear from Shir until there was no one left. And that was the end of his yeshiva. Just to show you his standard, a story that took place much later in his life, someone who he had given smicha to came to him once. And the Ragachever, he was very clever. The Ragachever sat with him and he said, you know, there's a mishnah that says like this. And they started talking and learning. And afterwards he said, okay, can you bring me your smicha? I just want to see it for a second. So he went and he got his klaf smicha. And the Ragachever ripped it off. He says, Rebbe, what are you doing? He says, I'm taking back the smicha. He says, you didn't realize when I started off what I said, the mishnah says, it's not a mishnah, it's a braisa. You don't know the difference between a mishnah and a braisa? He ripped off his smicha. So you can understand why the Ragachever's yeshiva didn't exactly work out. Okay, I think I need to stop here, even though I'd like to do a drop more with you. You know what? Okay. All right, I think we have to stop here. Okay, shkach, to be continued next week. Next week we'll get into some of the Torah and teachings of the Ragachever and finish up the biography. Okay.